Maggie Buckley had been shot dead at a fireworks party at End House, but it was obvious to everyone that it was not she who was the intended victim, but her cousin Nick, since there had already been three attempts on her life. For her safety, Poirot had installed Nick in a nursing home, but even there the murderer had made another attempt. To lure the killer out into the open, Poirot had taken the astonishing step of announcing to the world that Nick was dead. Now he was so confident he was about to solve the mystery that he summoned all those involved to End House.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and Simon Williams as Captain Hastings in Agatha Christie's Peril at End House.
It was a curious gathering that met that evening at End House. Everyone on the list of Poirot's suspects was seated round the table in the dining room, except for Ellen the housekeeper, who sat by the door. Frederica Rice wore a black dress, and Mr. Lazarus sat beside her, with George Challenger and Mr. Croft on the other side. Mrs. Croft was next to me in an invalid chair.
This is a surprise, isn't it? Makes a change for me, I must say. I think I shall try and get out more. Mr. Fyers made a particular point of my coming.
Mr. Fyers?
This is a rather unconventional gathering tonight, but then the circumstances are most unusual. In an ordinary situation, the will of the deceased is read after the funeral. But, in deference to Monsieur Poirot's special wish, I am proposing to read it now. That is why you've all been asked to come here. The will has come into my possession in a rather strange manner. Although dated last February, it only reached me by post this morning. However, it is undoubtedly in the handwriting of my late cousin, and though a most informal document, it is properly attested. The will is quite short. This is the last will and testament of Magdala Buckley. I direct that all my funeral expenses should be paid, and I appoint my cousin, Charles Weiss, as my executor. I leave everything of which I die possessed to Mildred Croft, in grateful recognition of the services rendered by her to my father, Philip Buckley, which services nothing can ever repay. Signed, Magdala Buckley.
It's quite true. Philip Buckley was out all alone in Australia, and if it hadn't been for me... Well, I'm not going to go into that. A secret it has been, and a secret it had better remain. Nick knew all about it. Her father told her. We came down here because I'd always been curious about this End House Philip talked so much about, and that dear girl couldn't do enough for us. She wanted us to come and live with her, but we wouldn't do that, so she insisted that we should have the lodge, and not a penny's rent would she take.
Had you any knowledge of this, Monsieur Weiss?
None. I knew Philip Buckley had been in Australia, but I had never heard rumours of an attachment of any kind there.
And you won't get a word out of me about it. The secret goes to the grave with me.
Well, Mother, this is a surprise. Nick never told me what she was up to.
Dear, sweet girl. I only wish she could look down and see us now.
Perhaps she does. Who knows?
Perhaps she does. And since we are all seated here around this table, why do we not hold a séance?
A séance? Oh. Wouldn't that be rather...
It will be most interesting. My friend Hastings has the most remarkable mediumistic powers. I feel that the conditions are propitious. Do you not agree, Hastings?
Oh, yes, very, very propitious.
If you would be so good as to turn off the lights, Ellen.
Yes, sir.
Now, if you would all put your hands on the table so that each hand touches that of his neighbour. Yes. Yes, he is already in a trance. Now concentrate, all of you. Concentrate on Mademoiselle Nick.
Oh, she is already on the threshold. She is here.
She's come back from the grave.
And now we will switch on the lights.
Nick, you're real.
Yes, Freddy, I'm real. Thank you so much for all you did for my father, Mrs. Croft. But I'm afraid you won't be able to enjoy the benefits of that will just yet.
Oh, my God, take me away, Bert. Take me away quickly. It was all a joke, my dear. That was what it was. Just a joke.
Curious sort of joke.
Well, well, if it isn't my old friend Millie Merton.
Inspector Jack.
Hand up your old tricks again, I see.
No, it was just a joke. Well,
that's all it was, really.
Whoever is forgery you've ever run across, Millie Merton. A real artist.
You mean the will was a forgery?
Of course it was a forgery, Charles. I left the house to you and everything else to Freddie.
To me?
There's someone at the window.
Oh! Quick, he's out there.
Leave him to me.
Are you badly hurt, Freddie?
No, the bullet grazed my shoulder, that was all. It isn't even bleeding. Oh.
Give me a hand, will you, Hastings? The poor devil shot himself.
Oh. Here, come on, ease him into the chair.
Freddie, I didn't really mean it. I didn't. Freddie.
Oh. Is he?
Yes, madame, I fear he's dead.
He was my husband.
The unknown factor X.
Yes, I always felt that there was an X.
I'll get you a brandy, Freddie.
It's on that table behind you, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Yes, I could do with one. I might as well tell you everything, Monsieur Poirot. He was a hopeless drug addict. It was he who taught me how to take cocaine. I could never escape from him. He used to turn up and demand money. It was really blackmail, I suppose. If I didn't give him the money, he threatened to shoot himself. Then he took to threatening to shoot me.
Here you are, Freddie.
Thank you, Jimmy. I suppose it was he who shot Maggie Buckley. He probably thought it was me. I ought to have told you, Monsieur Poirot, but I couldn't be sure. And then, a few days later, when I saw...
You saw the scrap of his blackmailing letter on my table.
And I knew that it was only a matter of time.
My dear, my dear.
I'm all right now, Jimmy. What had we better do?
Don't look at me, madam. I'm merely obliging an old friend. That's all I'm doing.
Mr. Poirot, can't we just hush it all up?
You wish that, mademoiselle.
Well, I'm the person most concerned. There will be no more attacks on me now.
No, that is true. There will be no more attacks on you.
And nothing can ever bring poor Maggie back to life again. Well, if you make all this known to the outside world, you'll only bring an awful lot of publicity and suffering on Freddie. And she hasn't deserved it.
So you want to hush it up, mademoiselle. And what about you, Hastings?
I agree.
Mr. Lazarus?
Yes, hush it up.
Commander Challenger?
Best thing to do.
Let's forget everything that's passed in this room tonight.
I don't think anyone was asking you, Mr. Merton, nor Millie here.
Ellen?
I won't say a word, sir. At least that's so dismanded.
Adieu, Mr. Vice.
You just can't hush up a thing like this.
Charles, think of poor Freddie.
I'm sorry, my dear, but the facts have to be communicated to the proper quarter.
5-1. And the good Jap is neutral.
I'm an holiday.
So, only Monsieur Vice declares himself on the side of law and order. You are a man of character.
The position is clear. There is only one course possible.
And I, too, range myself on the side of the minority. I, too, am for the truth.
But, Mr. Poirot...
Mademoiselle, you drag me into this case. You cannot silence me now. Sit down, all of you. And I will tell you the truth. I have here a list of persons I believed connected with the crime. I numbered them with the letters of the alphabet, A to F, and then I added the letter X for a person unknown. I did not know who X was until tonight, but I suspected that there was such a person, and I was right. But a day ago, I suddenly realized that I must add another letter to my list. Let us call it Y.
Another person unknown?
Not exactly. It stands for a person who should have been included in the original list, but who was overlooked. Reassure yourself, Madame Rice. It was not your husband who shot Maggie Buckley. It was the person designated as Y.
Then who is why?
Chief Inspector.
Acting on information received, I took up a position in the house earlier this evening, having been secretly introduced into the place by Mr. Poirot. On his advice, I concealed myself behind the curtains in the drawing room. When everyone was assembled in the dining room to hear Mr. Vice read out the will, a young lady entered the drawing room and switched on the light. She made her way to the fireplace and opened a small recess in the panelling.
The secret hiding place.
She took from the recess a pistol. With this in her hand, she left the room and made her way to the hall where the visitors had left their coats on arrival. She carefully wiped the pistol with her handkerchief and placed it in the pocket of her grey coat. The property of Mrs. Rice.
It's a lie. Every word of it.
Voila. It is Mademoiselle Nick who is the person Y. And it was Mademoiselle Nick who shot Maggie Buckley.
You've gone mad. Why on earth would I want to kill Maggie?
In order to inherit the fortune left to her by Michael Seaton. For her name, too, was Magdala Buckley, and it was to her that he was engaged, not you.
But that's nonsense. You can't possibly prove it.
You telephoned to the police, Chief Inspector Shap?
Yes, that should be them arriving now. They've got the warrant.
You've all gone stark, staring mad.
If you would kindly come with me, Miss Buckley.
Doesn't look as if you're giving me much option. Freddy, give me your wristwatch. As a souvenir, will you?
My wristwatch? Yes, here you are.
Thanks. And now, since you're so convinced that I'm a murderess, Mr. Poirot, and since the Chief Inspector has a police van waiting outside, I suppose we must go through with this ridiculous comedy.
A comedy that you yourself devised, Mademoiselle. But you should not have given the star part to Hercule Poirot. That, Mademoiselle, was your grave mistake. And now, the comedy. It is finished.
The Crofts, too, were taken away, escorted by Jap. The rest of us, Frederica, Lazarus, Challenger, Weiss, and myself, moved into the drawing room. Poirot looked round at us with a gratified smile and that air of mock humility that I knew so well.
Eh bien, mes amis, I was fooled. Completely and absolutely. I confess it. The little Nick, she had me where she wanted me, as your idiom so well expresses it. Ah, Madame Rice, when you told Hastings that your friend was a clever little liar, how right you were. Her stories were invented, very cleverly, to arouse the interest of Hercule Poirot.
But why?
To give the impression that Mademoiselle Nick's life was in danger. At the start of this whole affair, we have this young girl, Nick Buckley, beautiful, unscrupulous, and fanatically devoted to Endhouse.
As I told you at our first meeting.
And I, very foolishly, I admit, did not believe you. But Endhouse was mortgaged. It was falling to pieces, and she had no money to do anything about it. And then she meets the young aviator, Michael Seaton, and he is immediately attracted to her.
He certainly was.
She knows that in all probability he is his uncle's heir, and that Sir Matthew Seaton is worth millions. But Michael Seaton is not really in love with her. He thinks her good fun, that is all. They meet at Scarborough. He takes her up in his flying machine. And then the catastrophe occurs.
One day she brought Maggie along with her.
And he falls in love with her at first sight. Nick is dumbfounded. But to young Seaton, Maggie was different. The only girl in the world for him. They became secretly engaged. And only one person was permitted to know.
And that was Nick.
She gets to know that Michael Seaton proposes to leave everything to Maggie Buckley. She pays little attention to it at the time.
And then she heard of Sir Matthew's death.
And immediately after that, Michael Seaton's plane goes missing.
Straight away, an outrageous plan comes into our young lady's mind. Seaton only knows her as Nick. He does not know that she, too, is named Magdala. His will is very short and informal. He leaves everything to Magdala. And in the eyes of the world, Michael Seaton is Nick's friend. If she were to claim to be engaged to him, no one would be surprised. But if her plan is to succeed, Maggie must be eliminated. Time is short. She arranges for Maggie to come and stay in a few days' time. But then a major new factor comes into play. She reads in the local paper that I am staying at the Majestic Hotel.
You mean she really knew who you were?
Of course she knew, Hastings.
Oh.
Everyone has heard of Hercule Poirot. I believe in the peril that menaces her, and I play into her hands by asking her to send for a friend. She seizes her chance. She does not reveal that Maggie has already been invited. She asked her to come a day earlier than has been arranged.
So that she would be at End House with a fireworks party.
Where nobody would notice the sound of a gun going off.
Exactly. And how easy the crime is to arrange. On the night of the party, Nick is wearing black. Fool that I was, I concluded that she was in mourning. But it was because she had to be dressed exactly like Maggie. When everyone is outside watching the fireworks, Maggie begins to feel cold.
Yes, it did get awfully chilly.
The two women go back into the house. But Maggie cannot find her coat because Nick has hidden it. And it is easy to persuade her to wear the crimson shawl. As Maggie leaves the house, Nick steals out after her and shoots her. And then goes back inside to hide the pistol in the secret panel. And waits until she hears the sound of voices outside.
I'm sorry I've been so long, Maggie. I couldn't find my... What is it? What's happened? Maggie! Oh, Maggie!
How well she played her part. Magnificently. Oh, yes, she staged a fine drama there. Ellen said that this was an evil house, and I fear that she is right. It was this house which drove Mademoiselle Nick to take her cousin's life.
But the poisoned chocolates, were they the ones I sent her?
It was all part of the comedy. If Nick's life was attempted again after Maggie's death, everyone would be more convinced than ever that the shooting was a mistake.
So once we were out of the way, she simply rang you up, Mrs. Rice, and asked you to send her a box of chocolates.
And when it arrived, she fills certain chocolates with cocaine.
You mean to say that she actually had cocaine with her?
Madame Rice?
Oh, yes, she had cocaine.
She eats just one of the chocolates. She knows very well how much cocaine to take and just what symptoms to exaggerate.
But what about the card from you?
Ah, Savristi, she has a nerve. It was my card, the one I sent with the basket of carnations.
Ah.
So simple. And I fell for it.
Why did she put the pistol in my coat?
Oh, madame, had it never entered your head that Nick no longer liked you? Did you never feel that she might, in fact, hate you?
It's hard to say. We lived such an insincere life. She was fond of me, once.
Monsieur Lazarus, tell me frankly, was there anything between Mademoiselle Nick and you?
Nothing very serious. I was certainly attracted to her at one time. And then, I don't know why, I went off her.
Yes, that was her tragedy. She attracted people at first, and then, as you say, Mr. Lazarus, they went off her. And you fell in love with her closest friend. She began to hate Madame Rice. Madame, who had your love, and, as she believed, your wealth.
But in that case, why did she leave everything to me?
Ah, but that was last winter, when she was still fond of you, and when she had practically nothing to leave. But she remembered that will. She did not know that the Crofts had suppressed it, and she knew that with the death of Michael Seaton, it would appear to the world that you had a strong motive for doing away with her. That was why she made it seem that you had poisoned the chocolates. Tonight, the will would have been read, naming, as she believed, you as the inheritor of the Seaton millions. And then the pistol would have been found in your coat, the pistol with which Maggie had been shot.
She must have hated me.
Yes, madame. You had what she had not, the ability to win love and to keep it.
I may be very stupid, but I simply can't make head nor tail of this will business. How did the Crofts, or whatever their name really is, come into it?
Ah, that is a different operation entirely. The Crofts persuade Madame to make a will and leave it with them to post, but they do not send it. They make another in its place. Then, if anything happens to Nick, the appendix operation goes wrong perhaps, they will produce the document that Millie Merton has so cleverly forged in which everything is left to her. They had no idea that End House was so heavily mortgaged. They calculated on inheriting a valuable property.
But Nick sailed through the appendix operation without any trouble.
And so they wait. But then came the supposed attacks on Mademoiselle's life. Their hopes begin to rise again. When I announced that Nick was dead, they posted the forged will off to Mr. Weiss. By then, they knew all about the Seton inheritance, and they thought that their plan had succeeded beyond their wildest dreams.
Hmm. What I really want to know, Monsieur Poirot, is how did you first come to suspect Nick?
Oh, I am ashamed that it took me so long. It was when Maggie Buckley's parents sent me the letter that she had written to them on the day of her death. It contained one phrase that puzzled me.
You mean about why Nick had telegrammed her to come on Monday when she was arriving on Tuesday anyway?
Bravo, Hastings, that is exactly it. So Mademoiselle had lied to me, or at least she had suppressed the truth. And if she could lie about that, some of the other things that she had told me might not be true also. But still, it did not make sense. Why should she want Maggie Buckley killed? And then I suddenly recalled some trivial remarks that you were making a few minutes before, my friend, about abbreviations for Margaret. And it suddenly occurred to me to wonder, what was Maggie Buckley's real name?
You wondered whether it might have been Magdala.
It was an old family name. Mademoiselle had told me that. Now, what if Maggie were the Magdala Buckley to whom Michael Seton had left everything? In my mind, I ran over the letters of his that Hastings and I had read. There was a mention of Scarborough.
Maggie was with Nick at Scarborough. That's where she met Seton.
And it explains something that had worried me. Why were there so few letters? And why only those? And then it occurred to me. Nowhere in them was there any mention of a name.
But that's true. They all began darling or dearest love.
And there was something else, something I ought to have seen at once. Nowhere in any of those letters was there any mention of the appendix operation that Nick Buckley had undergone 6 months ago. No concern, no wishes for recovery. That should have told me that the letters were written to a different person altogether.
But what made you so convinced that Nick had hidden the pistol behind the secret panel?
Because Nick had so positively denied all knowledge of the panel's existence. She said that Ellen must be making it up. But why should Ellen do a thing like that? Again, I realized that Nick had been lying, which is why I persuaded my good friend Japp to hide behind the curtain and observe Nick take the pistol from its hiding place and put it in your pocket, madame.
All the same, I don't regret giving her my watch.
No, madame. And nor do I.
You know about that, too.
It's going to be a very unpleasant business. I must see about some form of defence for her, I suppose.
There will be no need of that, I think. That is where you concealed the stuff, is it not, Commander?
Huh?
In those wristwatches?
I haven't the faintest idea what you're talking
about. Do not try to deceive me with your bluff, hearty, good sailor manner. It may deceive Hastings, but it does not deceive me.
Huh?
You make a good thing out of the traffic in drugs, do you not? You are the useful boyfriend mentioned by Madame Rice in her letter to Nick. I advise you, if you do not want the facts put into the hands of the police, to leave at once.
Yes. You're right. I'd quite forgotten. I have an appointment to keep in Plymouth.
Did I not tell you, Hastings? Your instincts are always wrong.
You mean the cocaine was in the wristwatches?
Yes. That was why Mademoiselle had it with her so conveniently in the nursing home. And having put all her supply in the chocolates, she asked Madame Rice for her watch, which was full. But tonight she needed it for a different purpose. It will be a full dose this time.
Full dose?
It is the best way. Better than the hangman's rope. But we must not say so before Mr. Weiss, who is all for law and order. The contents of the watch, it is the merest guess on my part.
Your guesses are always right, Monsieur Poirot.
I've heard nothing. I shall go before I make myself a fellow conspirator. Good night, Monsieur Poirot. All I can say is that it has been a most remarkable experience.
Good night, Monsieur Weiss.
Good night, Mr. Weiss.
And so, Madame Weiss, Monsieur Lazarus, you intend to get married?
As soon as we can.
And I shan't need my wristwatch anymore.
I hope you will have great happiness, madame. You have suffered much, but despite everything, you still have the quality of mercy in your heart.
We must be going. It's late.
We have spent a strange night in an evil house. But of all my questions, there is one that is still unanswered. The picture of old Nick's grandfather, over the fireplace. She told me that you once offered £50 for it. It would give me great pleasure to know why you did that.
As you know, Monsieur Poirot, I am a dealer. That picture is worth not a penny more than £20. I knew that if I offered Nick 50, she would immediately suspect it was worth more and get it valued elsewhere. Then she would find that I had offered her more than it was worth. The next time I tried to buy a picture from her, she would not bother to get that one valued.
And so?
She did not know that the picture on the far wall is by Gainsborough.
As you say, monsieur, you are a dealer. Well, it is time for all of us to take our leave. I trust I shall never have to enter this house again, even though it has witnessed another of my little triumphs. And I shall think carefully before I announce again that I have solved my last case.
No more tempting the gods, Poirot?
Precisely, my friend. This is not the time to go back to the vegetable marrows. Who knows when the next bullet will come rolling towards my feet.
In the final part of Agatha Christie's Peril at End House, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat and Captain Hastings by Simon Williams. Chief Inspector Japp, Brian Pringle. Nick Buckley, Gemma Saunders. Frederica Rice, Susanna Hamilton. Charles Weiss, Stephen Critchlow. Jimmy Lazarus, Sean Arnold, George Challenger, Andrew Wincott. Mr. Croft, Terence Edmund, Mrs. Croft, Richenda Carey, Ellen, Hilda Schroeder. Peril at End House was dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.